Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. All the interviews in this series can be found at strugglingteens.com, along with 26 years of essays, visit reports, and press releases relating to the network of private parent choice residential schools and programs working with teens and young people making poor decisions. Today is September the 23rd, 2015, and we're going to talk about attachment. My guest is Alex Stravos, and good to have you here, and appreciate you taking the time, Alex.
Lon, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it, and thank you for doing these interviews.
Okay, well, let's get on with it. Now, Alex is the primary owner and CEO of the Kalo Family of Programs with headquarters in Missouri. This family of programs is comprised by New Vision Wilderness, Kalo Teens, and Kalo Preteens, a family of programs specializing in treating and healing the effects of early childhood stress, particularly as it relates to adoption and trauma. So, the title today, attachment, is a four-letter word. So, attachment, parenting has been popular, a movement, a lot of people talk about it, so all of a sudden this sort of sticks out. Attachment is a four-letter word. Well, just what do you mean by that?
Well, maybe what I could do first is start off by telling you what my goal is for the talk, because I really do feel like our organization is on a mission and doing some very important work.
Okay, that's very good.
What my goal is to give us a new lens to look through when we see, talk about, treat, and parent struggling kids that are adopted.
Okay.
So in order to give us that new lens, what I want to do is offer some new language and definitions and clearly state why our current language and definitions are counterproductive.
Okay, since we only have 10 minutes, that sounds like you're setting it up for a second interview, and that's good. Okay, so what's the lens that we're looking at it that is wanting?
Well, you know, so as you know, language and definitions are important because how we define the problem is critical to how we end up solving it.
Absolutely.
And before I dive in any further, I want to make it very clear that the adoption itself is not the problem. Adoption is good. Adoption is a blessing, and in fact, at Kalo, we celebrate adoption as the crucial healing relationship for these kids.
The parents has chosen them. They've been chosen by somebody, because sometimes that's the issue in adopted. Biological mother got rid of me, but they are chosen. Okay, that's good.
Right. So if we agree that having the right language and definitions are a big part of the solution, I think it's most important to start with the phrase attachment issues. And I also think speaking to this phrasing is particularly relevant for Kalo, given Kalo has historically been incorrectly labeled as the attachment program. And what is correct about Kalo is that Kalo is nationally recognized for being on the cutting edge of treating the impact of early trauma, particularly as it relates to adopted youth. But the attachment program concept becomes a misnomer.
Okay, so when somebody's talking about attachment, they're not really talking about what you're doing. It's something that's vague, and it's off in the other another direction.
Exactly. So I think the best way to offer a frame of lens to look at this term attachment issues is three points. And these are three points that reinforce why we need to minimize the use of the phrase attachment issues.
Okay.
So want me to jump into those three points?
Yeah, jump into them. Let's take them one at a time. Point number one.
Great. So point number one is the concept of attachment issues is shallow. And then I'll go into the detail in a second. Let me just talk about each three of the three points. And then point number two is that attachment issues are often misunderstood. And the concept comes with counterproductive and negative connotations. And then point number three is that if the adopted child does not have these so-called attachment issues, we tend to completely miss the mark. And so then the part two of this talk would really be about proposing new language and definitions to look at when we treat these conditions. I'm going to want to redefine attachment issues to something that makes more sense and really helps us move the conversation forward. But let me jump in maybe into those three points. Does that make sense?
Yeah, go ahead. Elaborate.
So the first point is attachment is a shallow term. So maybe I can ask you, Lon, when you hear about a kid with attachment issues, what comes to mind?
Well, because I've been sort of interested in it, the reactive attachment disorder, the RAD, RAD kid, comes to mind, but I know that's the more extreme. But, yeah, you're right. When I think about it, that's just sort of a general attachment
great.
Issue.
So, that can go a bunch of different directions. Right. And so I think, you know, when we think about attachment issues, at KALO, we think about them to describe issues that are arising due to inconsistent caregiving early in life. And sometimes that leads to reactive attachment disorder. But like you say, a lot of times when we say attachment issues, right away people think about reactive attachment disorder, and then that conjures up all these images in people's heads about a kid with really extreme behaviors, a kid maybe wielding a knife in the kitchen, screaming at their parents. And that's not completely accurate, because we still want to see what that early trauma and those early inconsistent caregiving relationships, how those relationships have impacted the kid. Mm-hmm. So the definition could be misleading.
Okay. So it's shallow, confusing. All right.
Right. And one of the things is because it can be misleading because it can lead us to think that attachment should have been or could now be the solution because it was what caused the problem. The reality, though, is that there are many different causes to the behaviors we're seeing, not just inconsistent caregiving. And that may not even be part of it. It's really complex. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about attachment issues, we really lose that complexity. For example, some kids we work with were not only exposed to substances, but also chaos while they were in the womb. And this fetal trauma has a significant impact on people, as you know. Mm-hmm. And there's this new research coming out on epigenetic science that suggests that the most critical and formative period of our life goes back even earlier than birth, that it's really at conception until birth as the most critical and sensitive period for us for establishing patterns in all areas of our life in the future. And during that period, it's not really a period that people think about attachment. And so a kid with fetal trauma won't really come up as concept of having attachment issues because they had fetal trauma and then were adopted at birth. But this fetal trauma is still one of the many reasons that kids are constantly on high stress and high alert. So clearly, this goes far beyond attachment.
Okay, so they never feel safe, and nobody can really, unless you really look at it, can really get a handle on where did this come from, this not feeling safe.
Right, and just as an example, as you can think about, what is it really attachment issues, or was it the fetal trauma, or was it certain neglect or abuse that happened early in life? That really had the impact. When we think about attachment issues, we go right away to think about a mother and a child. And that loses the complexity of really what's going on from an early trauma perspective.
Okay, the confusing misdirection, it's a vague term in a sense. Okay, your point two.
So just to build on just a little bit more with the shallow part that I think is important is to emphasize that complex, meaning when we say complex, we mean it's one thing after another that just builds on itself. So when we talk about complex trauma that's early in life, what ends up happening is that experience becomes repressed and now lives in the nervous system and the conscious brain. So the concept of attachment issues, in a way, negates the fact that it is complex. The phrase itself, in of itself, is limiting. And unfortunately, the shallowness of the definition also leads professionals to feel it isn't scientific enough, and definitely not as much as a standard mental health diagnosis, say, like depressive disorder or ADHD, for which we have medication and curriculums for treatment. And to compound the problem, few therapists really know how to treat attachment issues. So parents rarely get it as a first diagnosis and instead get other diagnoses. However, now the problem then becomes that we're overlooking the root cause and putting too much focus on what I would call the symptoms, namely ADHD and depression, for example. So to summarize, point number one, we need to minimize our use of the concept of attachment issues because it's too shallow of a definition.
Okay, and that seems to be the foundation for the whole thing, and we're running short on time, so the next points, and could you sort of hit on those to fit them in?
The second point was that attachment issues are often misunderstood, and the concept comes up with counterproductive and negative connotations.
Okay, and we sort of covered that anyway.
Yeah, we hear from parents, but my child was adopted at birth or at 1 year old, and we loved them and cared for them just like our biological kids. How could attachment issues have anything to do with it? Or they might say, but my child is attached. My child says he loves me. He has always allowed me to hug him. And see, the issue in this case is that when we talk about attachment issues, people have a very vivid idea in their head about what it looks like. And it is more often than not, in their eyes, not their child. One of the reasons why is because parents feel threatened by it because they equate it with love. My kids have attachment issues because I didn't love them enough, they might be thinking. They feel like they did something wrong. But in both of these cases, my child was adopted at birth or my child is attached, parents tend to become defensive. And one of the main reasons for this is because the concept of attachment reinforces some of the guilt and shame parents carry that they can't easily fix in their child. And for this reason, parents see it as a permanent condition rather than something that can be improved, which then pushes them to lose hope or to seek out other diagnoses that provide more comfort, where DBT or CBT, for example, can work, or where meds can do the trick. Unfortunately, the misunderstanding related attachment issues and the negative connotations and all the baggage are still preventing us from getting at the core. And that's really point number two.
Okay, and then a large part of what I see is that, and I've seen a lot of cases on this and in other areas, when you have the wrong diagnosis, you're going in the wrong direction, and sometimes it can even be harmful. Is that
right?
Okay. Now, want to rapidly touch on the remaining point?
Point number three?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the point number three is if the kid does not have attachment issues, we tend to completely miss the mark. And the third point I want to make, the third reason why we need to stop talking about attachment issues has to do with this. And let me give you an example. We had a young preteen in our treatment that was adopted at birth by an older couple. And this older couple had successfully raised other biological kids that were now grown up. And they had been having difficulty with his child from a very young age. And he had been on ADHD meds from a very young age, when he was like 3-4 years old. And for the first 12 years of his life, it was ADHD. That was the culprit. The kid, prior to coming to Caleb Preteens, was at a therapeutic boarding school, and eventually he was kicked out, and the boarding school said he needed an attachment-based program because the child had attachment issues. We ended up working 9 months with his family to understand what we were dealing with. His symptoms went far deeper than ADHD, even though the most recent psychological tester diagnosed him with severe ADHD and recommended upping the meds and a boarding school that specialized in ADHD. And the thing was is that we knew that this kid's biological mother was a drug addict and the father was abusive and also an addict. The kid was adopted at birth, but we totally negated that experience in the womb. So the parents were never able to get on board with the concept of attachment issues or early trauma because of that and all this baggage. And I think an important statistic to look at that kind of reinforces this is there's several studies in the United States that report that the proportion of adopted adults is 14 times higher than expected in two substance abuse residential disorder programs that was calculated. And so there's this over-representation. And I could quote very similar statistics when it comes to ADHD, just like the drugs. The ADHD and the drugs isn't necessarily the problem, but we end up jumping on those bandwagons because it sounds more formal. So to summarize that third point is that if attachment issues doesn't become what we talk about with an adopted child, then what becomes the issue is the diagnosis itself. And because of that, we then definitely miss the mark because we don't think about or spend time on what happened prior to the adoption.
You know, one psychiatrist told me, and just to the point that you're talking about, and I've heard this from more than one, that the most common diagnosis is misdiagnosis, and it sounds like you're exactly talking in that area.
We do, and at Kalo, we have 85% plus of our kids at any given time are diagnosed with ADHD. And if you think about the impact of early trauma and how it has you be on high alert and anxiety and stress, you can misdiagnose that with ADHD. So to reiterate, there are three major reasons why we need to minimize the use of the phrase attachment issues. Number one, the concept of attachment issues is shallow. Number two, attachment issues are often misunderstood. come with negative connotations. And number three, if the adopted kid does not have attachment issues, we definitely miss the mark. Now, before we close, I do want to emphasize a few things. And first, that most adopted kids and adults are living highly successful and fulfilling lives with wonderful families. In fact, those early life experiences are exactly what end up making them into the amazing human beings they are. They're better and stronger because of it. For example, I don't know if you knew, but Steve Jobs, Bill Clinton, and Nelson Mandela, to name a few, were all adopted. And I also want to make the point that I made earlier, that adoption is not the issue. And to focus on adoption as the core issue is not only misleading, but detrimental. Adoption is the solution. The adverse experiences prior to the adoption typically are the root cause. And these experiences can happen not only in utero, but can also be passed down through generations. And the symptoms now live deep in the body. And lastly, in closing, for those that are struggling, the message is that there is tremendous hope. With advances in science and new treatment interventions, we now know that healing needs to look like, and that there is hope.
Okay, well, I think we've set ourselves up for a second interview to go into, we've covered here, where the language is part of the problem and is misleading. And so we're going to have you back again and talk about, okay, what is the type of verbiage we should use? But we're over our time already, so we're going to have to close it up. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Been talking with Alex Stravos. And attachment is a four-letter word, and really appreciate your time, and very, very good, very informative, Alex, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Lon. Keep up the great work.
Okay, and one other question. How would somebody, if they want to talk to you more about it, how would they get a hold of you?
The best way is our website's are very informative. You can go to kaloteens.com, kalopreteens.com, or newvisionwilderness.com.
Okay, well, very good. Well, thank you very much. And this is Lon Woodbury of the Woodbury Report. Been talking about attachment is a four-letter word. And Alex, this has been very good. Today is October 8th, and we're going to talk about attachment. And the title is Attachment is a Four-Letter Word, Part 2. My guest is Alex Stavos. I hope I got it right that time. Good morning to you. It's still morning to me. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Lon. As we were talking about earlier, things are busy here at our Kalo residential programs with some full preteen homes and a full girls program, and our wilderness program in October is reaching an all-time high census, and so it's keeping things busy, but preventing me from enjoying the outdoor fall weather that's coming.
Well, that's what happens with the success. It keeps you indoors more, I guess.
Yep.
Okay, well, good to have you here, Alex. And today the title is Attachment is a Four-Letter Word, Part 2. Now, last week we talked about attachment as a four-letter word. That was part one. And why don't you summarize a little bit what the point you were making? The thing that comes that I remember mostly is attachment is a confusing, a vague term in working with struggling teens. So why don't you summarize what we talked about last week?
Great. Thanks, Lon. And part of what I want to do in this conversation, too, is focusing a little bit more of the lens on adoption, so attachment issues within the context of adoption, too. And my main goal, really, is to give us a new lens to look through when we see, talk about, and treat and parent struggling kids that are adopted. So I think it's a good idea. Let's revisit what we talked about last time. And in summary, that conversation is that we need to find a new way to think about and talk about what we label as attachment issues. And on the last call, there are basically three points that we discussed. Point number one was that the concept of attachment issues is shallow. And if you remember that, it really was from a place of that when we talk about attachment issues, we think about it as a relationship with the caregiver and that there was issues that happened within that context, but we don't think about it, what if there was something that happened in the womb, or what if there was an abuse, or what if there were other adverse experiences that didn't have to do with attachment? And so there's this shallowness to it. The second point was that attachment issues are often misunderstood, and the concept comes with counterproductive and negative connotations. Often parents equate attachment to love, And so they would feel like if I only had loved them enough, things would be better now. And so there's a misunderstanding in terms of what that could be. There's also this understanding that when you talk about attachment, you think about behaviors. So there's attachment issues, which is really not a diagnosis. You're really referring to behaviors, and then people think about reactive attachment disorder, which becomes more extreme. And so that becomes counterproductive, and parents and clinicians usually don't want to diagnose that if there's more extreme. And if they do, it's because the behaviors that we're not dealing with the core issue. And the third point is that if the child is adopted, and we don't talk about these so-called attachment issues, we tend to completely miss the mark. And this is where we can start to get into, well, what do we talk about instead if we're not going to talk about attachment issues?
Well, that brings us to the next point. And you're talking about a new paradigm of looking at children, adopted children that are having problems. So what's the new terminology or new concepts that you think is more helpful in providing treatment?
Well, we believe that a term that covers more of what's going on and goes deeper, but also is broad and specific enough, and that there are specific interventions related to this term, is trauma. And instead of attachment, we should talk about trauma. And let me be clear before we go any further here that I'm not talking about attachment theory, because attachment theory is sound, it's powerful, it's incredibly impactful, it's the foundation of a lot of our work. It's the foundation of understanding how the body and the nervous system and the brain develops and how important attachment theory is in consistent caregiving. That does have an impact. That is critical to development. But we have to understand that adverse experiences in general, when in the womb or early in life, can be manifested in many different ways, not only within the context of an attachment figure, but it can be within the context of adults. It could be in the context of friends, of siblings. And therefore, later on, some of the challenges we deal with in relational issues, because trauma ends up being a relational problem, if you have a relational issue you have to solve within a relational context, is that attachment becomes really about the parent. And so if that relationship with the parent feels like it's good, but the relationships with all the peers or siblings or our teachers is not good, we don't talk about attachment issues, and then we don't end up talking about trauma, and instead we end up talking about a lot of the diagnoses the kids have, which typically end up being almost 80% of the time ADHD. Very often there's going to be depression diagnosis, a mood disorder, a depressive disorder, bipolar disorder is common, and often oppositional defiant disorder diagnoses. And then what happens is we start to look at it through the lens of trying to heal those diagnoses through medications, psychiatrist visits, specific interventions that address ADHD or address depression, and then we're not even talking about the experience early in life and how that's impacting the nervous system and the brain, and we're missing a big opportunity.
Let's talk about how it manifests a little bit, because you talked about, I think, sir, largely in relationships that it sometimes is good, sometimes bad, but I assume if there's been a trauma, it might manifest itself its way in depression or in some other negative behaviors, but not necessarily. You might still have a decent relationship with people, but hopeless, feelings of hopelessness or depression or things like that. Is that true?
Yeah, yes. I think that there's, what I'd like to talk about is two things. One is, I'm going to say some simple definitions for trauma. Two of them. One of them is, trauma is the body's inability to integrate adverse experiences. The body's inability to integrate adverse experiences is the first definition I give. The second definition is the inability to be here and now. And these two statements are important for the following reasons. The first one is the body's inability to integrate means that it's a body problem. It's also a brain problem, but what I can definitely tell you is it's not a cognitive brain problem, especially because our cognitive brain isn't fully developed until we're 25 years old. And so when we have early trauma, how is that impacting our cognitive brain? And a lot of the impact ends up being in the unconscious brain. And the unique thing about the unconscious brain is that you can't retrieve logical things from the unconscious brain. You can still heal it, and there are unique evidence-based interventions to heal that. And the other aspect of the body is that it now lives in your nervous system. So it's not integrated, it's disintegrated. And so there's no memory of it, there's a cognitive memory of it, but there's an experience in the
body of high anxiety, of stress, of being on high alert. And that's a body experience. And so that's important when we think about trauma.
Okay, let's talk about the parents. We've got a couple of minutes left, but talk about the perspective of the parents and at home. How can they use this, seeing this through a different lens that you're talking about, trauma instead of attachment, how can that help them with their having an adopted child especially, and there's some behavior problems? How can that help them better understand what's going on and getting the help that the child might need?
It's a great question, Lon, and I think the biggest thing we get from parents is that they're exhausted. They're tired. They've been from mental health professional to mental health professional to psychiatrist to program to therapist, and the diagnosis list gets longer, it gets changed, and nothing seems to work. New medications. And meanwhile, the child looks at them and says, "Mom, I do not know why I do what I do. I do not know how to change. And you never should have adopted me anyway. I'm bad. I'm not worthy. I'm always going to do this." It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and parents feel helpless. They feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. The child feels helpless, hopeless. And so the message here, the first step is to say there is hope. And the lens that we think is important to look through is that when you have early trauma, and you have trauma in general, there are neurological reasons why human beings start to ascribe blame to themselves. The reason they experience that traumatic event is because of their fault. That creates shame. And so early on, the child, be maybe in a mother's womb who is pregnant, that doesn't want the child, is mad that she's pregnant, the child starts to feel this. There's already connection happening. Maybe there's an abusive boyfriend in the home that's being loud and yelling. That the baby's bathed in cortisol. And so that stress, the baby is born anxious. And so even if a parent adopts early, the baby's born anxious. There's already a lack of sense of self. And what that means is trauma is creating high stress, high alertness, a sense of shame, and later on, it forms an I don't trust adults, I don't trust people, I don't trust the world, therefore I need a control. And so the interesting line is that you see here is when I talk about high stress, high anxiety, what diagnosis are you going to get? You're going to get ADHD because they can't focus in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to get anxiety disorder because small things stress them out. And that's because the brain is in survival mode. But then you also get diagnosis of depression. Well, why do you get that? Well, because the kid doesn't have a solid sense of self. They don't feel like anybody knows who they are, so they're depressed. And the last one is that the world is unsafe and adults aren't safe. So how do you get safety? You need to start to control. And so what we want to be able to tell parents is that there are logical reasons why your child is doing everything they're doing. It makes total sense. They're survivors. They're not manipulators. They're survivors. And if we want to heal this, we have to understand how the trauma occurred, and it occurred within the context of relationship, even if it's in the womb. And the second thing is we have to understand that it's an issue of relationship and connection. Remember that trauma is the inability to be here and now, and the only way to have a healthy, intimate relationship is to be here and now, to connect with someone. So what we need to do is we need to lower that stress, lower that anxiety, lower all those fight, flight, and freeze mechanisms so that these children can authentically connect with us, first of all. And the second part is when we talk about lowering all that, we have to recognize that we have to not use often what's being used are things CBT or DBT, cognitive talk therapy, advice, insight. If that would have worked, we wouldn't be here with a lot of these kids. What we need to use are interventions that attack the nervous system, the unconscious brain, neural therapies, trauma-centered, trauma-sensitive yoga, brain spotting, all of these interventions that attack this trauma at the core. And eventually we're going to find out that the ADHD diagnosis goes away. The child no longer needs ADHD medication. There no longer is the controlling aspect. You heal the trauma, the symptoms, which often are these diagnoses, start to go away.
You know, that sounds like that's sort of crying out for what's been called very popular, the mindfulness, because I think that's part of what the things you talked about aim at.
It is, Lon. Mindfulness is now, but what I would tell you, though, what's important is that there's a lot of energy around mindfulness, but we always have to go back to understand trauma. And if we say that trauma is the inability to be here and now, then our goal is for them to be here and now. And a lot of times what happens with mindfulness and meditating is we take clients to some other place.
imagine an ocean, imagine the forest. We don't know. What was their experience in the forest and ocean? Was it good? Was it bad?
Maybe they almost drowned, and that would be a bad guided meditation.
Right. So we want them to feel, and a lot of mindfulness is this too, is feel here and now. What does it feel like to be right here, present, with your feet on the ground, connecting with me? Because what trauma is you're always in the future and the past. You're worried about what's going to happen because of what has happened. And that's what anxiety and stress is. And these kids are locked in that permanently. Not sometimes. Sometimes it goes through the roof and it's extreme, but they're always locked in that state of high arousal and stress. So therefore, we have to be careful with mindfulness. We also have to be careful with yoga, even trauma-sensitive yoga. Important. We do trauma-specific trauma-sensitive yoga because yoga can be fairly triggering as well and traumatic. A lot of the positions, a lot of the language that's used can trigger a lot of those experiences. So a deeper understanding of trauma and how deep it lives in the body is critical to the healing of these kids.
Okay, well, we've about ran out of time. Actually, we've gone over, but you were on a roll, and I didn't want to interrupt there. But this is something we could go on and talk about for hours because you just opened up a whole bunch of new questions in that. But we have to knock it off. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Been talking to Alex. He's the executive director of Kalo in Missouri. They work with primarily adopted children. And we're talking about attachment is a four-letter word, part two, and the focus is trauma rather than attachment in thinking about them. Well, thank you very much, Alex. Thanks for being here.
Great. Thank you, Lon. This was fun.